If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Ronan Kelly heads medical oncology for esophageal cancer at Johns Hopkins Medicine. He's a thoracic oncologist and is leading research efforts in esophageal, gastroesophageal, and gastric cancer. He's our guest in this segment on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, as we discuss esophageal cancer. Dr. Kelly, I guess when we talk about cancers in the pecking order of cancers, those being lung cancers and skin cancers and breast cancer and blood disorders, when we hear esophageal cancer in the pecking order of these cancers, it's probably not getting there, but it's gaining ground, isn't it?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me on your station. Absolutely. Esophageal cancer is certainly not as common as lung cancer, which I also treat, but we are seeing a dramatic increase in the cases of esophageal cancer. It's actually regarded as the fastest increasing by incidence solid tumor in the U.S. So it's definitely on the increase. Although, as you mentioned, the incident rates are still low, with about 17 to 18,000 new cases a year. It's certainly not as high as lung or breast cancer, but we are definitely seeing an increase in incidence.
All right, here's Dr. Mike Roizen. Take it from here.
Is the increase, Dr. Kelly, and we should say that the website that has a lot of information on esophageal cancer is the Esophageal Cancer Action Network, or ECAN, www.ecan.org. It's a .org. Is the reason for the increase, Dr. Kelly, that we're obese and getting more gastroesophageal reflux disease?
Right.
That's GERD or causing heartburn. Is that thought to be the reason for the increase?
Exactly. That's thought to be the reason for the increase. What we've seen is a change in the histology or the nature of esophageal cancer. In decades, the 60s, 70s, 80s, the other type of esophageal cancer was called squamous cell carcinoma. We've seen that has decreased. And what we've seen is a dramatic increase in the other type of esophageal cancer called adenocarcinoma. Now, this is occurring mostly at the lower end of the esophagus. If your listeners are imagining a plumbing system, with our mouth being the start, and then the esophagus is where the food goes down before it goes into the stomach. Just at the junction where the esophagus and the stomach are joining, we call that the gastroesophageal junction. And that's where we're seeing the vast majority of our tumors in the U.S., and they're the one that's increasing, the adenocarcinoma type. Now, the reason we think we're seeing the increase there is, as you mentioned, this increase in people having what's known as heartburn, or the other medical term is gastroesophageal reflux. And there's so many millions of us out there that are taking Tums or taking some antacids to relieve heartburn, but we probably aren't thinking the fact that this is not a normal symptom. None of us are meant to have heartburn. But we do know that there is a link between heartburn, or, as I said, GERD, and esophageal cancer. And we think maybe that link is something called Barrett's esophagus, which, to describe that to your listeners, is not a cancer in itself. It's just that there's a change in the cells that line the esophagus, just where the cells that line the lower part of the esophagus are slightly different from the cells that line the stomach. But when the acid is coming up, is washing back upwards towards the stomach, it's causing a change in the lining of the lower part of the esophagus. And those cells start to resemble more like stomach cells. And it's that change, when they change from esophageal to stomach cells, we think that that's the change. And some patients, unfortunately, can develop cancer as a result of that.
Now, by the way, people can email us questions for you at udocs@gmail.com. And we've got a couple already. One from Morgan, who said, why is squamous cell cancer decreasing? And you've often said on the show that 2 baby aspirin a day decrease a number of cancers, including esophageal cancer. Is that true, or does it just decrease squamous cell and not the new cancer that's increasing?
Well, to answer your first question, we have seen a decrease in squamous cell carcinoma, and we think that mirrors the decreasing cigarette consumption use. So when we see we've seen a mirror image where cigarette consumption has decreased. We see that the incidence of esophageal squamous cell carcinoma. So the main risk factors for the squamous cell would be alcohol and cigarettes. But we don't really see that link with the other type, which is increasing, which is adenocarcinoma. We think it's caused by a lot of other factors, as we mentioned, reflux, but also sometimes if patients are slightly overweight or diet, that can be the cause for the adenocarcinoma type. With regards to...
Go ahead. Sorry, I was going to
answer your question about aspirin. We're doing significant research on that right now. So whenever we can take something to prevent cancer from happening, that's what's called chemo-preventative strategy. Can we prevent, cancers from happening? And so some common medicines like aspirin or like anti-inflammatories, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, are being investigated. The difficulty with that is that it takes quite a long time for that study to be completed. And so even though we have quite a number of trials that have been done that show that they can be prevent cancers from happening, we're waiting on some of the more bigger ones that are probably going to come out in the next couple of years. But I think there is some data showing that aspirin can certainly help.
And there's another question here, and it relates to the first one. And this one, someone named Moses sent in, and I don't know, I assume that's a him. From Chicago, and he says, aspirin seems to be an acid. How come an acid will decrease this if gastric acid increases it?
Yeah, well, you know, the mechanisms, it's more at a molecular level in terms of how these drugs are working. But these COX-2 inhibitors, just their ability to turn off certain enzymes and so on, we think that's the ability by how some of these drugs can work.
Now, esophageal cancer is a bad cancer, isn't it? I mean, it has a high mortality rate. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, that is correct. Part of the reason is that there's been, as you mentioned at the start, you know, it's not as common as lung or breast or colon cancer. So there hasn't been as much research in this disease as, say, other common tumors. Now, we are certainly trying our very best to do as much research as we can, and I think we're beginning to make significant inroads into this. But as you mentioned, patients can present with, really, when they present with esophageal cancer, we divide them up into four different stages. Stage one...
Before we get into those stages, Dr. Kelly, tell us, what are the symptoms that people have with esophageal cancer that take them to physicians?
So the most common symptom that I see is people are, they have difficulty swallowing. So usually it can come on quite suddenly or it can come on gradually, but the common history is someone says, you know, I'm just not able to swallow steak or chicken or bread, and it feels like I have this sensation of something getting stuck in, and they point to the middle of their chest. Now, because that can interfere with people's ability to get enough calories in, we then see patients can also present with weight loss, so unexpected weight loss, difficulty swallowing. Now, the difficulty swallowing can be for not just for solid foods, but it can also be for liquid, and that would indicate that the stricture or the narrowing in the esophagus is even more severe. If someone's not able to swallow a glass of water, that would indicate the stricture...
When we come back, we're going to talk about the stages and other things in addition to difficulty swallowing that bring people to physicians. Joe?
Okay, Dr. Mike, thank you. I'm here. Dr. Ronan Kelly is our guest this afternoon today, and we're discussing esophageal cancer. udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamins C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Ronan Kelly is a thoracic oncologist. He's leading research efforts in esophageal, gastroesophageal, and gastric cancer. Esophageal cancer is our topic today on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And again, back to Dr. Michael Royson.
And the subject where we were was, what are the stages of esophageal cancer? How do they present differently? And how do the treatments differ based on these stages? And we've been talking and are going to talk with Dr. Ronan Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, who's chief of thoracic oncology at Johns Hopkins, and is also told us that one of the greatest places to go for information on this is the ECAN network, Esophageal Cancer Action Network, but it's abbreviated ECAN.org. So go to the website, www.ECAN.org, for much more information. So Dr. Kelly, tell us about the different stages and different treatments based on those stages.
Well, so let me tell your listeners what we would do if someone comes in with the symptoms that we've described previously. So when we talk about staging the tumor, what we're trying to figure out is, how far advanced has the tumor spread? Now, the normal way, the normal investigations that we would do, the first one, as we've already spoken about, is someone should go for an endoscopy if they're having symptoms like the difficulty swallowing or the unexpected weight loss or this chronic cough that won't go away. They should talk to their doctor if they have some of these symptoms, and their doctor would recommend getting an upper endoscopy. And if on the endoscopy there was a stricture or a narrowing or a tumor visible, the doctor, the endoscopist, would biopsy that and then would tell us whether or not they have cancer. Now, if they have cancer, that's normally when they are sent to my clinic. And the normal test that we do a CAT scan to see if the tumor has spread anywhere else. We also do a PET scan, which also helps us to see if the tumor has spread beyond the chest. But probably the most significant one is something called an
endoscopy. So those tests don't take very long to do, so you can do those in a couple of days, and then you go on to ultrasound, is that what you said?
Right, an endoscopic ultrasound, which again is like an endoscopy, so a tube bends the esophagus, but there's an ultrasound probe at the end, and so it's able to tell the doctor how far into the wall or the muscle of the esophagus has the tumor spread into. And so that's called the T stage. Everything that we do in cancer, we divide it up into three stages. The T, which stands for the tumor size, N, which stands for how many lymph nodes, N for nodes, and M, has it metastasized or spread anywhere? So with all those tests, we're able to then tell the, you know, we're able to then decide whether this is stage one, stage two, stage three, or stage four. And the treatments then change depending on what the stage of the tumor is.
So now, we have a note from one of the producers that says, clarify that, would you? And what she means by that, I assume, is T tells you the tumor size, and what's the difference between a T1 and a T2 and a T3 or whatever the number is?
Oh, sure.
And then so you really said the second part of staging
is the lymph
node. Go ahead, sorry.
So again, what I normally tell my patients is to imagine the esophagus as a pipe, and what we're trying to decide is how far into the wall or that thickness of the pipe is the tumor invading. And so there's a few different layers in that, in the muscle of the esophagus. The first one is called the mucosa, then there's another one called the submucosa, and then the third one called the muscularis propria. So the ultrasound is able to tell us how far into the wall the tumor is going. So if it's into the very superficial layer, we call that T1 or tumor size 1. If it's gone into the middle layer, we call that T2 or T3. And then if it's spreading just actually through the whole wall of the esophagus, we call that T4 or tumor size 4. And then what we're trying to, you asked about the lymph nodes. So we look to see how many lymph nodes look suspicious. And so we count them. And if there's 1 to 2 lymph nodes that look suspicious, we call that N1 disease or lymph node 1 disease. If there's 3 to 6 suspicious lymph nodes, we call that N2. And if there's more than 7, we call that N3. And so by doing that, we're then able to give a final stage. So whether something is T1, T2, T3, or T4, we then look at the lymph nodes. Is it N1, N2, or N3? And the final part is, has the tumor spread anywhere else? Has it metastasized? And if it has, then it's metastatic disease. If it hasn't, then it's going to be, you know, either stage 1, stage 2, or stage 3 based on what we found from those tests.
And that depends on, so if it hasn't spread very far, it is, I assume, surgically resectable. That is, you can take it out with surgery. And if it's spread far, that's when you use radiation or chemotherapy.
That's exactly why we're trying to do the staging, to decide if someone is surgically operable or not. And so the patients that are operable are the stage 1s, 2s, and 3s. Stage 4, we generally don't consider surgery the right thing to do, because if the tumor is spread into the liver or the bones, then, you know, doing a big operation like an esophagectomy would not really be the right thing to do in that instance. And so I can just tell you a little bit about why we want to stage it, because stage 1, we really just send patients straight to surgery. We don't think they need any chemo. We don't think they need any radiation. If someone is stage 2 or stage 3, and that would depend on how many lymph nodes and how far into the wall the tumor is spread, we, in the United States, and now the Europeans have also started doing it, we do what's called trimodality treatment, which basically involves chemo and radiation together up front for about 5 weeks of treatment, followed by surgery. And then we just assess what the surgeon has seen to see if any additional treatment is needed. But that's what trimodality means, where we're using the three different specialties of chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery.
And before we go and say thank you and go to our tip of the week, Donna asked a question quickly. Is this the cancer that Michael Douglas had?
I don't think so. I'm not sure what he had, but I think he has throat cancer, so it'll be slightly different. Before we go, can I just again mention that April was Esophageal Cancer Awareness Month. DCAN is the largest nonprofit organization in the U.S. They're relatively new. They've been set up in Baltimore by a lady called Mindy Mordecai, and they are really doing fantastic work. They have great information on their website, www.ECAN, which stands for Esophageal Cancer Action Network.org, and all the information that I've spoken about will be there.
Great. And that's Dr. Ronan Kelly of Johns Hopkins. Thank you very much, Dr. Kelly. And we'll go quickly to a tip of the week. And the Real Age tip this week is, almost anyone who takes medication for high blood pressure or is a spouse, parent, or pal who does will likely recognize this reaction. Do I really need to take this pill for freaking ever? And the answer is yes. We're here to say there's new news that you should. For drugs that bring down your blood pressure, it doesn't just put off heart trouble or stroke. Every month you take them, they add about 2 days to your life and less disability. Take them for 20 or 30 years, you're talking lots more days. In fact, the real age benefit for treating someone with a blood pressure of 140 over 85 and just getting it to 120 over 75 is about 8 years younger. And that's the real age tip of the week. Joe?
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s, but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game-changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good-tasting, and all-natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A. TakeOmega.com.